Welcome to the Georgia Today podcast. Here, we bring you the latest reports from the GPB newsroom. On today's episode, authorities make an arrest in a 16-year-old cold case. Pharmacists in Georgia may soon be able to prescribe contraceptives. And if your home lost value because of homelessness in your community, some lawmakers want you to be able to sue your city.
Put simply, if a local government refuses to do its job, we're going to hit that local government in the pocketbook and put the money back in the hands of the property owners.
Today is Thursday, March 5th. I'm Peter Biello, and this is Georgia Today. Authorities have arrested a South Georgia man in connection with a murder that took place 16 years ago. The Georgia Bureau of Investigation yesterday announced the arrest of Willie James Jr. of Wayne County. He's charged in the 2010 killing of Sandra Robinson in Douglas in Coffee County. The mother of four was found stabbed inside the store where she worked. GBI Special Agent in Charge Jessica Hamilton said a breakthrough came after a renewed review of the evidence.
The resolution of this case should serve as a powerful reminder to families still waiting for answers in cold cases.
James was arrested in Valdosta on Monday and is being held in the Coffee County Jail. The Georgia House of Representatives passed legislation yesterday that will enable pharmacists to prescribe contraceptives. Patients prescribed contraceptives could also pick up a year's supply at a time. State Representative Beth Camp sponsored House Bill 1138 and says it will help improve access to reproductive care.
In many counties in our state, there are no OBGYNs. 82 counties do not have an OBGYN, so the pharmacist is the health care provider in those counties.
The bill passed 162-4 and now moves to the Senate for its approval. The Georgia House passed a bill yesterday that could allow property owners to sue local governments for lost property value related to homelessness. GPB's Sarah Callis reports.
House Bill 295 would allow property owners to sue local governments if their property value decreases, while a local government fails to enforce Georgia's public nuisance laws for things like panhandling or public camping. Republican State Representative Houston Gaines sponsored the bill.
Put simply, if a local government refuses to do its job, we're going to hit that local government in the pocketbook and put the money back in the hands of the property owners.
Democrats like Representative Carla Drenner opposed the bill and said it overstepped on local control and did not provide any real solutions for homelessness.
Accountability without resources is not accountability. It is punishment.
House Bill 295 passed 98-75 along party lines. For GPB News, I'm Sarah Callis at the State Capitol.
More and more people are turning to bikes to meet at least some part of their transportation needs. For some, that means choosing a bike over a car. For others, bikes are a necessity. Meanwhile, deaths of cyclists continue to rise in Georgia and the nation. GPB's Grant Blankenship recently attended a memorial for a longtime cycling advocate in Macon.
If you want to just move up a little closer, it's really hard to hear with that traffic.
It's a rainy Saturday, and a few dozen people are gathered around a white bicycle. White frame, white tires, white wheels. On a grassy bluff above four-lane State Highway 22 north of Macon to pay their respects to Michael Ryan.
What I'd like to ask you to do, if you want to, is to say something about Mike.
Bunny Gehling organized this ghost bike ceremony for her friend on behalf of the Georgia Wilderness Society. It's only been 4 years since the club did this for another friend.
We biked 3 times, 2 times.
Michael Ryan fought for decades for safer roads in and around Macon. His sister, Judith Ryan Graff, says he also rode his bike on every continent except for Antarctica, before he was killed late last year, 10 miles from home.
And here he dies on a Georgia highway. And that's cruel irony in my book.
After the ceremony wraps up, the activist who brought Michael Ryan's ghost bike gets back in his car with two more on the roof, headed to Chatham County, where Kayla Brown leads the advocacy group Bike Walk Savannah.
You know, one of the bicyclists who passed away in 2024 was my friend Forrest.
Brown's friend was one of 26 cyclists killed in Georgia that year. The number jumped to 29 the year after, reflecting an almost decade-long national spike. And Georgia has the 9th highest rate of cycling deaths in the country. That's according to the Federal National Highway Traffic Safety Administration. Brown says her friend was killed on a 6-lane section of U.S. Highway 80, which was striped off for bike lanes but lacked any real physical barrier between cyclists and cars. She says there's a ghost bike at the spot.
having a ghost bike out there does a lot to encourage people to slow down and really, you know, bring attention to the problem area.
Brown says, well, attention is good. What needs to happen are changes in the design of the roads where people die, more features that protect cyclists from being hit at all. For many, the stereotype of a cyclist is someone in a city who chooses to go without a car. But about half the time people are killed on a bike in Georgia, it's not in cities at all, but in suburbs or even in the country, and on roads maintained by the Georgia Department of Transportation. And a lot of the time,
you know, those fatalities are individuals who can't own a car or can't maintain a motor vehicle. There are so many people who don't have another transportation option.
And Brown says it's not like the people she works with at GDOT don't know the kinds of road designs that are safer for cyclists and pedestrians.
The problem that we come up with state projects or state routes is that a lot of things that have been programmed for those state routes have been programmed for 10 years.
She says that slow bureaucratic churn is what makes it very hard to inject new thinking into road design.
Can I say one thing?
Back at the ghost bike ceremony, Dave Gardner tells his friends to remember how much things like that bothered Michael Ryan.
So, in remembrance of Mike, it's my opinion that the best thing that we can do to honor him and his memory is to keep pushing these politicians for safety.
Meanwhile, Michael Ryan's ghost bike will be here on the side of the highway as a reminder. For GPB News, I'm Grant Blankenship in Macon.
Delta Airlines has announced major changes in its top leadership. The Atlanta-based airline's CEO, Ed Bastian, today named the new president and chief officers for operations, finance, and marketing and products. Bastian said the changes were aimed at developing leaders who will shape Delta in the years to come. Bastian has led the company for about a decade, but has said that he has no plans to retire. Children's Healthcare of Atlanta is getting a new CEO. The healthcare system said today that CEO Donna Hyland will retire this year and be replaced by former Children's cardiologist and administrator Patrick Frias. Hyland has led the nonprofit since 2008. Children's is the state's only freestanding pediatric healthcare system with more than 1 million patients annually. Gas prices are up in Georgia this week. The average price for a gallon of regular is $3.17. That's up from $2.78 a week ago. Auto Club AAA says prices are rising because of global instability related to the war in Iran and normal fluctuations related to the change of season. An Atlanta abortion clinic is at the center of The Devil is Busy, an Oscar-nominated short documentary streaming now on Max. The 31-minute film follows one day inside a clinic that's become a critical access point for patients across the Southeast since Roe v. Wade was overturned in 2022. GPB's Pamela Kirkland spoke with co-director Crystalyn Hampton.
This nomination, this is your directorial debut. You co-directed this with Geeta Gambhir. Can you take me back to the moment that you found out that you had been nominated?
Oh, wow. Thanks for that question. You know, I think I'm still, you know, floating about this moment. You know, I've been really consistent in trying to create quality work my entire career as a dancer and as a filmmaker. So for when that moment happened, you know, you always want it, but when you actually hear it, I honestly just screamed because I was just like, what? You know, and I feel like this film is such an important, I'm really proud of this film. It's an important issue, and I'm so glad that, you know, it's been recognized.
Let's talk about what the film is about. So Roe v. Wade was overturned in 2022, and you have this clinic that's caring for patients from across the Southeast where abortion laws are even more restrictive. And then you have abortions in Georgia that are prohibited once a fetal heartbeat is detected, which is typically around 6 weeks of pregnancy. How did seeing Atlanta become this access point kind of shape the story that you wanted to tell?
Well, I think, you know, we wanted to figure out a way to reveal the humanity behind this unfortunate decision to women. And a lot of the states that's near Georgia were the ones that were immediately affected. So seeing like, you know, women having to travel for miles to come and just get basic health care taken care of, you know, was something that was remarkable for us as women filmmakers. And we saw the instant impact. And we chose, you know, Georgia because one, I live here, but honestly, it's because of all of the different states that surround us that, you know, were immediately lost access immediately. And so we wanted to be able to, you know, capture those moments.
In the film, you have someone who arrives who just passed the legal limit. What was it like filming some of those conversations that were going on?
Yeah, I think it's hard for all women, you know, the providers, the staff, because it's the staff that actually has to break it down for them. Like, you know, sorry, you were one day over, you know, and it was really heartbreaking to see some women just like, you know, one woman we off camera spoke with was just, you know, heartbroken because she's like, I don't want to be, this is not what I want in my life right now. This is what I can't afford in my life right now. And every woman, I think they should have the choice to make any decision for themselves. And, you know, it was really hard to take in and watch.
Let's talk about Tracy for a minute. So she's the clinic's head of security. When did you realize that Tracy was going to kind of become the heart or the center of this film?
Ooh, well, she was my heart right when I first met her. She's the first line of defense. And, you know, the first time I went onto the campus, the protesters were really aggressive. And I was sort of like a little shook because I knew that, you know, they say, oh, just drive past them when you arrive. But I wasn't expecting that much aggression. And so I think she sort of like looked at me as like, oh, you're going to be okay, girl. So she sort of just took me in and we just really hit it off. The person you see on camera is who she is. You know, she has this heart and of courage and compassion that sort of, you know, spills over to everyone that she meets. And, you know, Tracy's just a lovely woman. And I think she's confident in her faith. That also helps to fuel her day to day and get her going. Because I honestly could not do that job every day. But, you know, she's definitely a woman of courage.
Which brings me to my next question, the title of the documentary, The Devil is Busy. Tell me a little bit about how that came to be.
Well, you see, the devil is busy in everything that Tracy says, you know, and like most films, you come to the title at the end of the filming, and we play with a lot of different titles, and that just felt like the right one.
Krista Lynn Hampton is co-director of the Oscar-nominated documentary, The Devil is Busy. It's streaming now on Max. Krista Lynn, congratulations again, and thank you for coming on Morning Edition.
Thank you for having me. This is great.
The inaugural Hindsight Film Festival is underway this week in Savannah. Organizers say it's the first major U.S. film festival devoted entirely to historical documentaries. Founder and festival director Pat Longstreth says those films often get overlooked at other film festivals.
There are a lot of great festivals that include historical documentaries and have them as part of the program, but usually it's only a small portion, and usually the films don't play in the primetime spots.
Longstreth says this film festival includes films about sports, the military, art, and music, along with conversations with filmmakers and subjects after many screenings.
There's a really wide, diverse, creative selection of films that I couldn't be happier with.
The Hindsight Film Festival runs through March 8th in Savannah. And that's a wrap on this episode of Georgia Today. Come on back tomorrow. We'll have more news waiting for you. Just subscribe to this podcast and you won't miss a thing. And check gpb.org/news for updates to any of the stories you heard today. Now, if there's something you wish you heard on this podcast, or maybe you've got some feedback for us, email is the best way to tell us. Our address is georgiatoday@gpb.org. I'm Peter Biello. Thank you so much for listening. We will see you tomorrow.